Welcome to Under Lock and Key, news and commentary about prisons from the Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League and the Maoist Internationalist Movement.
There is no freedom of speech in prison. Prisoners report on their struggles against censorship.
The U.S. incarcerates a greater percentage of its population than any other country, sending more black men to prison than college. The purpose of this program is to educate about and inspire activism against the American lockdown.
Prisoner reports victory against censorship in Indiana. Here recently, I was given all of the old MIM newspapers that were previously confiscated. I think we have a victory against this camp for now. I'm still filing grievances and pursuing litigation and will keep you informed as things unfold. Do keep me on the mailing list and inform all the comrades of this small but meaningful victory today. This was a letter from a prisoner in Indiana.
In a few moments, we'll bring you a commentary by Mamia Abu-Jamal. Mamia is a black nation revolutionary fighting for his life on Pennsylvania's death row. Mamia was framed for the murder of a police officer because he is an outspoken opponent of American imperialism. This Mamia Abu-Jamal commentary was recorded by Bruderhof Radio. Bruderhof Radio can be contacted at www.freespeech.org/Bruderhof or via the phone numbers 1-800-778-8361 or area code 914-658-8351. This Mamia Abu-Jamal commentary is entitled Race and Rage in Wilkinsburg. Listen to how the eavesdropping guards respond to Mamia's criticism of American injustice.
Okay, this is Race and Rage in Wilkinsburg. The Latin poet Horace once said, "Anger is a short madness." The media, like a flock of starlings fed full on the mulberry bush, has flown on to the next disaster, the next catastrophe, and the next story. What remains in the suburb of Wilkinsburg, near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, is a vast psychic and emotional chasm of hatred, fear, and loss, stemming from the recent shootings of five white men, allegedly at the hands of a 38-year-old black man named Ronald Taylor. According to media accounts, Mr. Taylor erupted in anger at a maintenance man at his apartment, shot him, torched his own home, and then embarked on a one-man rampage that left five people wounded, three of them fatally. Almost immediately came reports that the man was a racist, insane, or both. The fast food form that media takes today issued pop psychological diagnoses that were quick, provocative, and ultimately unsatisfying. The race for speed often sacrifices depth and meaning, yet this is the defining characteristic of the contemporary media. Why did this carnage happen? I don't know. Is Mr. Taylor insane? I don't know that either. Mr. Taylor may hold the answer to the first question. The second may be answered after an examination by mental health professionals. No reporter can honestly make these determinations without taking the time to learn the answers, for they too don't know. These simplistic one-note fast food media McNuggets of misinformation provide a false sense of solace to those many gripped in fear and anxiety in the wake of the shootings. Why, he's crazy, some assert, and while the claim is calming, it answers nothing. Former Massachusetts prison official and psychiatrist Dr. James Gilligan noted in his book, Violence, Reflections on a National Epidemic, published in 1996, what actually provoked violence, and I quote, "I've yet to see a serious act of violence that was not provoked by the experience of feeling shamed and humiliated, disrespected and ridiculed, and did not represent an attempt to prevent or undo this loss of face, no matter how severe the punishment, even if it includes death. For we misunderstand these men at our peril if we do not realize they mean it literally when they say they would rather kill or mutilate others, be killed or mutilated themselves, than live without pride, dignity, and self-respect. They literally prefer death to dishonor," unquote. Does this reflect Mr. Taylor's inner life? We cannot now know, but Dr. Gilligan surely provides some valuable insights. For what is black life in contemporary America if not a constant exercise in humiliation? What did the acquittal of the four killer cops of Amadou Diallo mean except a collective communal loss of face? The right to walk a street, to drive a car, or even stand in one's doorway comes dangerously close to the commission of a capital crime in some U.S. cities. Again. What's up? Hold on.
Said you're not allowed to be talking to a radio station.
I know.
Prisoners at SCI Green hunger strike. This report is from a Pennsylvania prisoner. On August 30th, 48 death row prisoners at SCI Green in Pennsylvania have been participating in a hunger strike. Our goal is to obtain a policy that will grant capital cases the same privileges as those given to the general population, except the freedom to move about the institution. Currently, we are subjected to extreme restrictions, limited visits, lack of educational programs, poor medical treatment, and a denial of other basic needs. Because power never concedes anything without a demand, we must demand by sacrifice. This was a letter from a Pennsylvania prisoner on the 4th of September. Segregation in prisons helps expansion policy. This is a report from prisoners in Kansas. As inmates here in segregation, we sit down and continuously watch the parole board pass over inmates for a year, and they recommend work release or a treatment program which is not available here in segregation. We've seen that years go by, and those inmates are still being held in segregation, and the parole board passes them once again without even asking the Department of Corrections in Kansas why they did not act on the parole board's recommendations regarding that inmate's treatment needs. The fact of the matter is that segregating inmates has become pawns in a sinister political game that corrections officials were playing with the state legislature. Lamentably, the parole board has been duped, if not willingly, into being a perfunctory party to this machination. Medium and minimum custody inmates are being kept in these maximum security bed spaces at the correctional facilities solely to keep the appearance of always being full to capacity, so that correctional officials can keep going to the legislature every year to ask for more money to keep building onto these correctional facility compounds. Without some way to maintain this appearance of being full capacity, every legislative session, there is no compelling reason for the legislature to keep granting correctional officials requests for more funds. Governor Graves said in his State of the State address that building prison space is a priority for his administration. His spokesperson, Don Brown, put it this way: "What we want more than anything is some way to address the prison crowding problem. The governor's preferred alternative is to meet the prison space needs head-on by expanding in maximum custody bed spaces. Correctional officials have made a calculated decision to use segregation or segregated inmates to assure this achievement of the governor's policy objective, meaning more units at these correctional facilities. If a study were commissioned by the legislature and done by an independent organization like the RAND Corporation, it would reveal that more than half of the inmates being continuously housed in segregation not only do not need to be segregated, but also that they do not even need to be in a maximum security facility at all. This is easily proven by the fact that most of those housed in the maximum prison have medium and minimum security points in their files. Keeping all these minimum and medium security inmates in these maximum security bed spaces has become an efficient political economy or currency for these clever-ass prisoncrats who are now running and controlling the Kansas Department of Corrections. When the report we just aired was printed in MIMNotes, the Maoist Internationalist Movement added the following commentary: "These comrades do a good job of exposing one of the reasons for housing prisoners in segregation or maximum security, namely, to bolster support for additional prisons. Another reason is to segregate prisoners who can educate and organize other prisoners. Prisoners who are politically active leaders write us frequently to explain how they have been targeted for unjustified segregation, even by the rules of the white settler nation-controlled prisons. The various players, from the governor, to the legislature, to the parole board, and the prisoncrats, all represent the interests of the white settler nation. Their purpose is to use American prisons as a tool of social control and national oppression. MIM does not believe that any group of these players is duped. Rather, they are serving their class and national interests in proliferating America's prisons. The comrades suggest that the RAND Corporation would be able to do an unbiased study of prisoners incorrectly housed in segregation. The RAND Corporation is not an independent agency. It serves the interests of the bourgeoisie, just as the New York Times and other bourgeois journalist sources. When we talk about independent institutions and independent research, we're talking about proletarian institutions and research. The national, class, and gender interests behind reports mold the outcome.
A better solution would be for these prisoners and others in the institutions to use this example of American injustice as a means to build support for proletarian struggles. Specifically, do your own research to the extent possible. Use the information to expose the specific aspect of the American prison system's corruption and injustice. Report from a Pennsylvania prison. I have been organizing the brothers in prison as well as on the outside, and I am sure I will do much better once I'm outside. Here, 15-minute phone calls cost between $13 and $15, and a visit to the infirmary is $2 plus another $2 for medication. About building education for the prisoners, most of the education programs have been cut, and we can only have 10 books at a time. This was a report from a Pennsylvania prisoner. Prisoner fights denial of medication in Illinois. I've been taking medications for hypertension and cardiac problems for 25 years. I was prescribed 2 medications by my family doctor and have taken them since. When I arrived at the Menard Correctional Center in downstate Illinois, the healthcare medical director, Dr. Frinnerman, told me that their pharmacy services did not carry the 2 drugs that I were prescribed, so therefore they were going to have to experiment with what was available until we found something that worked to control my problems. I refused and made him aware that my medical file clearly states that the 2 medications were controlling my condition just fine and that I was not a guinea pig to experiment on. They wrote it up as I refused my medication and allowed 12 days to elapse without supplying me with either my hypertension or cardiac medication. I had submitted a sick call request slip that went unanswered and had written an emergency grievance to the warden without response. And I addressed the healthcare unit administrator after the 12 days without medication. The administrator forwarded me this memorandum, quote, "Subject, medical concerns, blood pressure medications. In response to your recent request, I am offering the following. Upon investigation and a discussion with the director of nurses, it is revealed that you have been compliant with your medications and that you did not refuse to accept your medication as reported. This has been a breakdown in the medication distribution system. I appreciate you reporting this incident, and a complete investigation will be conducted into this matter by the director of nurses with corrective action taken." End quote. The prisoner continues, "I addressed the director of nurses in regards to what correcting action did her office take pertaining to this issue and never received a reply. Talking with a dozen or more prisoners with long-standing chronic problems, it was revealed that after Dr. Frinnerman became the medical director, he systematically started to change medications of people who had taken them for years, and as a result, there were some adverse reactions. A lot of grievances were filed, and a couple of prisoners filed mandamus action in state court. My refusal to comply with the experimentation forced staff to replenish my former medications." This was a letter from an Illinois prisoner on the 23rd of September, the year 2000. Guards brutalize Florida prisoners. This report is from a prisoner in Florida. "I received your newsletter, but it took a while for me to receive it. It was being scanned. On the envelope, it had impound crossed out, question crossed out, and then it was finally approved, but pages 6 to 10 were taken completely out. So you can see they scan and read every word they can, trying to find something so they can deny it. The Department of Corrections doesn't want us to learn anything that's going to benefit us in any way. The same conditions that are described at Under Lock and Key, the cruel conditions at Montana State Prison, are happening right here in Florida's many prisons. These people can keep you on so-called strip status for up to 7 days. Sometimes they keep you even longer, whether it's cold or hot. They don't care as long as they can torture you any way they can. Here in Florida, a person can be held in lockup up to 6 months, just under investigation, without any type of hearing whatsoever. Prisoners can state witnesses on the disciplinary report, but seldom are those witnesses allowed to be present at the disciplinary report hearing. Prisoners are found guilty just by the officer's statement or to the extent of the disciplinary report. Prisoners seldom beat violent disciplinary reports. The officers have many ways of getting a person they don't like in any way they can." In the newsletter, a writer speaks of the close management status we have in Florida. We also have a lockdown called CMX. That's only at probably 2 prisons in Florida. We are locked down for 5 years in the least before you see a review board. CMX is the strictest lockdown that Florida has. I got myself off of CM after 22 months. I worked myself down from CM1 and 2 and finally made it on the compound in July. So you see, we go through hell here in Florida as well. Now I'm out here trying to open some of my brother's eyes, and at least those who want to see. Continue to keep the newsletter coming, and I'll continue my studies and try to broaden my mind in my studies and daily life. Peace to the people. This was a letter from a Florida prisoner on the 7th of October.
This has been Under Lock and Key,
a revolutionary anti-imperialist league and Maoist internationalist movement program about prisons. For more information, contact RAIL, P.O. Box 712, Amherst, Massachusetts, 01004, or email radio@mim.org.